This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 365 for Wednesday, June 17th, 2020. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this week, Mr. Brockett Vola is back. You can find him at TheCatVolver on all the social media that matters. And I have to say, dude, I don't remember which platform it was that it scrolled by, but there was a really darling picture of you and Emerson that came up the other day, and I don't know whether she was pointing at the screen or just waving or whatever, but it was a cute photo. It was a really cute dad and daughter photo.
Oh yeah, we went out so there's a university, or in Canada university, no the your a just university nearby, and it's closed, obviously all the kids have been sent home. And but the campus is open, and for where Emerson is right now, which is just below 2 years old, which is crazy, we can go out there, and you know, it's all like paved, big wide walking areas, and then green spaces, and for the most part, like, there's still people there, but you have so much open space that, like, it's much, much easier to avoid them and keep the 6 feet. Mm-hmm. And so we've been going there because it's awesome. I can let her out of the stroller and she can pretty much run, and it's so wide open I can see, and I know there's not like cars driving by on the street. So like, we've been going there a bunch, and then 2 days ago her and I went over, and for a brief moment I was able to get her to sit down and look at the camera to take a picture. Most of the time she wants to look at the phone to look at pictures of either herself or other things. and so taking the picture is actually much harder to do, and she doesn't avoid smiling, but she definitely doesn't totally process the hey, smile, you know, whatever.
Right.
So that was a rare good one that I got. I sent it to my wife, and then my wife posted it because she's lovely, and I don't always have the instinct to go beyond just the initial photo. So, but we had some really cute ones of her yesterday too. She has hair long enough now we can put it up in like a weird, like almost alfalfa from the Little Rascals-esque ponytail.
Right.
And she's running so fast, so it looks really cute. Little squishy antenna. So
yeah. Nice.
Just finding some joy out there. But yeah, thank you very much. I always like posting things about her. I've realized that I'm not a big poster about myself that often really anymore, since I don't do a lot of stuff for self-promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything I can put, I usually have, or that involves her, it's usually a lot of fun.
It's weird when you think about social media, because like for me, a lot of what I post is just sharing food, you know, because I like to cook and I like just good simple food, you know, a lot of stuff prepared at home, and the rest of it is usually just like podcasting stuff. Like it's mostly just like, hey, there's a new episode of this, or hey, don't forget to check out that sort of thing. Cause I haven't been doing any personal art in like 6 months. Well, longer than that, but I've done some art, and I've even done some art that I'm quite proud of, but it's all under NDA because it was for a television show. And so I can't share it. It's like,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So the very busy artist is like, Joel, you've got no art in your feeds. Like, yeah, it's because nothing I do right now is allowed to be shared, you know, or in some cases it's stuff to make ends meet, and it's not something I'm really proud of, you know, or it's like the 100th time I've done a cartoon avatar of someone. So like, it really doesn't look any different than the other ones that I've done. People have seen it before. So I haven't really got into any posting for my artwork in a while. I also find too, and it's been an interesting development in social media, and I've been hearing a lot about this on some of the podcasts I listen to about tech, and that a lot of these platforms are adopting temporary things like Instagram stories that only last 24 hours. Snapchat has something similar. Twitter now has something similar. I don't, well, Facebook just is all part of Instagram now. So like the Facebook, I think it's called a story in Facebook. Same idea. You can make a post and the post is what kind of hangs around. But then when people just have like fleeting thoughts that they don't find super important, a lot of that is me taking pictures of like my dinner on a Tuesday night. It's stuff like that that you'll post in a story, whereas before it would have ended up in the feed. But then when you look at my feed, it's like three different things. It's like pancakes, Minecraft podcast, the Citadel Cafe. Pancakes, Minecraft podcast, the Citadel Cafe. Like, because I'm not a slave to social media. I don't post daily. Like, so Monday is the Spun Chunks. Wednesday is the Citadel Cafe, or sometimes Thursday, depending on when I post on social media. And Saturday is pancakes. And so I might be uploading stories in between, but I don't have anything post-worthy kind of that happens other than those three events during the week. I think I posted waffles just to kind of ruffle feathers on Sunday, just to kind of see what would happen. But
dare you.
Yeah, I know, right? The pancake thing is a bit of a meme for me, which is why I keep doing it. Because, I mean, it's been like 7 years of pancakes on Saturday mornings. Like, it's kind of silly.
I think at this point, the wellness checks for Joel come in when it's gone like 2 or 3 weeks without a pancake pick. I think people would be like, something's wrong with Joel. Joel's been abducted. He's like, somebody's just like nerfing his like Twitter feed because Joel would never go this long without a pancake pick or something.
If I don't if I miss 1 week, even if I decide to have pancakes on Sunday instead of Saturday, like maybe I go for a hike on Saturday and I end up going out for breakfast with a friend before, you know, we did that last summer. And then I don't post pancakes that Saturday, they end up being on Sunday. Before the 24 hours is up, one friend will message. And it comes out of concern. And in part, it comes out of like, you know, you've been so consistent with this, but also like they're kind of like jabbing me a little bit. So it's like, I'm joking with you, but I'm also just checking in saying like, no pancakes today. And it's just like, yeah, you know, but my friend Mark Spagnolo posted a family breakfast. He made pancakes Monday morning. And he said, like, you know, you're having trouble getting started Monday morning. Make some pancakes. It's amazing how much they change the day. And I typed a comment as like, my name is Joel Duggan and I approve this breakfast. And so you get a kick out of that. And he said, like, I knew you would, because people just associate me with pancakes. And I don't, my Instagram feed would have you think that I eat them every day, but I eat eggs and a bagel every morning for breakfast, but pancakes are a Saturday thing. And I'll have reminders from Facebook. It's like, hey, do you remember this from like 5 years ago? And it's a picture of pancakes. And it's like, yes, sort of. I mean, I know I did it, but like not that particular breakfast. No, I don't. But
it was legendary. It's funny, during pandemic, we've adopted sort of pancakes on the weekends. They're incredibly easy for Emerson, and we've been loading him up with blueberries. Just recently put in chocolate chips, and it, like, that's really the only way she eats chocolate, because we've convinced her cookie bars are actually granola bars and like Nutri-Grain bars. So she's like, "Ooh, cookie!" And like cookies to her, the like the breakfast wafer things you'll get that are like, you know, like high in like, you know, like wheat grains and whatever.
Oh yeah.
So like all of those things we've convinced her. Ice pops are like frozen like pieces, like yogurt from like a tub or whatever we put in a popsicle. So all of these things are like whatever, but the chocolate and the chocolate chip pancakes is real, like actual, like what you consider candy. And she is eating the chips out of them, but like I should be taking more pictures of them, because every time we roll out pancakes on Saturday, Sunday, I'm like, well, here we are. We're living the Joel life. This is awesome.
My influence has spread far and wide. I had a business email come in the other day, someone looking to make some connections in some art spaces. And she led the email by saying like, hey, hope you're well. I see you're still having pancakes every Saturday morning. And this is like, it's barely an acquaintance through professional stuff that I've done, not really a close friend. So I just love how it's kind of permeated the online space. You should try, I'm curious as to whether, does Emerson like bananas? Because you could put bananas in pancakes.
She, oddly enough, is not a texture person for bananas.
Oh, interesting.
We can get her to eat things with it, but for some strange reason, as a baby, she loved them, like pureed. But I think that's because it's all like super sweet at the time, and now it's more of like a textury thing. Yeah. So,
well, even I'm fussy. Like my bananas have a very narrow window of when I will eat just a raw banana.
Like, yeah, I feel that. Yeah.
There's like, I buy them green in the grocery store because I don't want them to be black by the time I get them home. And then there's this in between phase where like it gets to the point where like the banana is either going to be baked into something or I have to figure out a way to eat it, you know, like in a way that will be better than just eating it raw, like just unwrapping it, peeling it, unwrapping it. Wow. Peeling it and eating it, like, because
Canada has very strange bananas.
Yeah,
it's cool though.
my favorite way to have a banana is usually with just a little bit of peanut butter and just like jar of peanut butter, a knife, and just a banana. It's like a really quick snack. Usually a really good post workout snack, actually. Sometimes when the bananas are too soft, I end up putting them into like sandwiches, like a peanut butter banana sandwich. But if you want a really good sandwich, think grilled cheese. But instead of cheese, you put peanut butter and banana in between the bread, and then you grill the bread like you would a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
So now, again, you got to be careful that your banana is not too ripe, because then it just turns into mush. But if it's too ripe to eat on its own, but then not, you know, and you don't, if you only have the one, you can't really make like banana bread or anything else, then putting it into a sandwich like that is really good. It's one of my favorites. I went on a banana peanut butter kick there for a few weeks in April. That was just what I had for lunch almost every day because it was just easy and it was still cool. So having a hot lunch was nice, all that kind of stuff. But
oh, that's delicious. Yeah. Yeah. That would be nice to open up some more avenues. We're trying to meal plan at this point. That's not the same seven things. So Emerson's starting to get to a point where she's probably looking at us like, is it Tuesday day? Is it Wednesday day? Is it Thursday day? Like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. I eat a lot of chicken and I eat a lot. I used to eat a lot of ground beef. I've been dialing back on that a little bit. Mostly because like summertime, like hamburgers and things like that. But if I allow myself, I will have hamburgers all the time.
Delicious.
But I picked up some fish. And most of the time, my eating habits have adjusted because of COVID-19 and having to reduce the grocery trips. I'm not buying as much fresh stuff. I'm buying stuff that I can freeze, you know? And so I picked up some fish fillets. I don't remember when, because they're frozen, so they last forever. But I had some of those last week, and just to kind of change it up. And it was nice. I've not really gotten into cooking fish much. I usually put it into curry from time to time, but this was just a straight up fried fillet. And I have cast iron pans now. So yeah, it makes a big difference. I was quite surprised. Now they're bassa fillets, so they're not terribly flavorful. Like I prefer haddock, but it was a nice change. And you can really tell, and I've always been kind of like I'm not a vegetarian, I'm not a vegan, I don't have any gastrointestinal allergies that make me eat a certain way. I eat healthy, I try to eat pretty healthy, but I've always kind of had the idea of like, I like a balanced diet. Like I eat meat, I don't eat a lot of meat, but I do eat meat pretty much daily. But what I've realized is that I've just been eating quote unquote easy meat, you know, like just chicken, you know, or sometimes pork steak. I don't get into sausages or too much processed stuff. Although there are some local butchers now that have some really nice things that are not made at a giant factory somewhere in Alberta, you know, like it's actually local.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
But I've noticed that just, you know, changing things up more, having more fish, tuna fish and stuff like that. I've noticed that I've been feeling better, and I don't mean that I was feeling bad before. I just feel lighter. Like I just kind of feel a little bit less, lighter. It's the best way to describe it. Just less weighed down, you know, after a meal when it's not like a lot of ground beef or, you know, stuff like that. I also don't eat a lot of pasta. I used to years ago, and I've switched to mostly sweet potatoes, mainly because I like them. I get yams for you in the US, I guess.
We still call it Sweet
Potato. Do you?
This is just the most Canadian conversation I've heard from you in a while when you were talking about fillets and you like haddock instead, and you're saying pasta as like a different, in a different way, and I'm just like just absorbing the culture of Canada in comparison to the United States. And
I often say fillet of fish, but I caught myself saying fillet on the podcast and I thought, well, I might as well just stick with it. rather than flipping back and forth, like, well, I've said it wrong once, I might as well just stick to my guns and go through it, right?
It was great though. It was awesome.
Yeah. You guys have the nasal A on pasta, right? Like it's not. Yeah. I say pasta. You say pasta.
Pasta. Yeah. Although I'm a big aunt instead of an aunt.
So well, yeah. If you aunt, have a... aunt is something that you squish with a boot.
Exactly. And aunt is exactly. So yeah, there's a bunch of those different ones, which is fun. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just cool. I wish we could do more fish. My Laura's not a big fish person, unless there's tartar sauce involved.
Like a good fish and chips sort of thing, like fried fish.
Yeah, more again, just literally tartar sauce she likes. Which I actually hate.
If you guys ever get up to Canada, if you ever get up to Nova Scotia, then we'll have to take you for some real fish and chips, because I have been other places and they have offered fish and chips and I've sometimes taken them and been like, no, you don't know what you're doing. Why did I think it was a good idea to order fish and chips in Toronto?
clearly a basset instead of a haddock. It's got a real garbage situation going on.
Yeah,
definitely that would be worth trying, because I like a nicely breaded, crispy, grease has not soaked through it to the point where like it destroys it. And then I really dislike what we call steak fries, which are like the giant fat finger length ones that I see a lot of times sometimes with fish and chips. Because they just get so soft, they're so soft and like almost raw in the middle, and I hate that. But if it's done well, that plus the fish, and if you've done both of them fried in a way that still makes them very crispy, it's delicious. I personally prefer it with the vinegar, or if I'm feeling incredibly, incredibly, incredibly offensive to everyone around me, I'll do it with soy sauce, because I absolutely love tempura, but to me, fried fish is, it's similar enough that I'll just like take a fish stick. I'll just take fish sticks that Emerson eats and just dip them in soy sauce, like low sodium soy sauce. It's delicious. Like I have no trouble. Like who's staring at me? Like I'm in my house, like whatever.
You know what this processed fish sticks needs? More salt.
Low sodium, extremely salty sauce. That's exactly what I want. It's delicious though. Yeah, but my veins just run white with granules of salt. So
right.
That's fine.
Yeah. I'll be fine. Yeah, that's when you bleed salt.
I'm an American after all, aren't I, Joel? Come on.
Yeah. Well, speaking of minerals, I actually have something to share with everybody as to what I've been up to this week. I've mentioned this game on the podcast before, and I've really been pulled back into it big time, and that is Satisfactory. It's from Coffee Stain Studios. We'll have a link in the show notes. Just released on Steam this week. Got a bunch of emails, which made me think about trying to get back into it. It's about $33 Canadian, which is roughly 25 US, I think, if the pricing is consistent across the board. It's on sale for 10% off on Steam. And it's 100% worth it, because it's early access, and there's two different ways to play. You can play the early access version, or you can play the experimental version. So when they develop new things in the game, the experimental people will get it sooner, but you run the risk of like things crashing and things not working the right way and stuff like that. So if those are the kind of things that bug you for something that you paid for, even though you are helping the developers make it better, then the early access version is all of the stuff that is, I want to say not bug free, but it's refined to the point where they feel it's very playable and at least consistent. And so I've been playing that. And a few months ago, update 3 came out, and that added pipes to the game. And for those that don't know, Satisfactory is a building and resource management game. It's got some survival and some exploration in there. You're on an alien planet, and you basically have to go there and mine iron and copper and all these other kind of things for the Fix-It Corporation. And the Fix-It Corporation and Ada, which is your administration digital assistant, she's got a sense of humor very similar to like GLaDOS from Portal.
Yeah.
So she's kind of like, you know, please be careful when jumping around. We wouldn't want you to damage any of Fix-It, you know, property. No regard for your physical safety. Like, just don't damage the really fancy tool that we've given you to build things with. And so, like, there's stuff like that throughout the game. And I, it's been a long time since I've played the tutorial, but the tutorial was quite fun. It's slow in that it paces you out a little bit, which is fine. I do remember my second playthrough, they've changed a lot of the early tech trees, and it does feel a lot slower. But I think the idea is that they're trying to make it a little bit easier for new players. But they also added a new thing for return players, where you can skip the tutorial and you kind of start like after tier one and you have a bunch of stuff unlocked. You've got conveyor belts and factory parts and things. But I've been having a lot of fun with it. And I think in part, you know, we've mentioned a few times on the show, just like coping with food and dealing with different things with lockdown and, you know, world events. And I mean, it can be a pretty stressful time. So I've really enjoyed being able to go into Satisfactory and kind of like just control everything. Like, you just, how fast is that belt going to move? As fast as I want it to move. Like, it just, you can just control all the things. And everything is in order. Everything is very satisfactory, pardon the pun. It's a really apt name for the game. But I've really been enjoying it. And I did a couple streams over on twitch.tv/JoelDuggan. They're really chill because the game involves quite a lot of thinking in terms of planning and how are you going to work things out. It ends up being a bit of a math problem and a space puzzle. So say you've got an iron node that's pumping out 120 iron per minute. You then have to smelt that into ingots. You have to turn the ingots into screws and rods and plates. And every different machine that does that takes a different amount of resources. So you kind of have to do, you know, split the track so that it goes 60 to one and 60 to the other, and then you got to split those again so it goes 30 and 30, and just to try to get everything to run smoothly and efficiently. And as you're doing that, you're sacrificing some of these resources to just the game mechanics of going to a different tier, getting different capability, going from burning biofuel to burning coal, and, you know, and building more coal power and bringing in hydro. And I knew a lot of that from my first playthrough, but this next bit that they've added with pipes really opens up a lot. You have to then manage water to cool your power plants. You can also use what's called hyper tubes to move around your base. Do you remember the old pneumatic tubes from like the 40s and the 50s where they would send messages around buildings?
Yeah, like banks still use them somewhat. Futurama, they would always show people in the tubes being sucked through all of them.
That's exactly what this is. So you have all these pipes and you get used to using them for water and cooling your systems. And then they say, oh, hey, you've unlocked hypertubes. Because at this point, your base is kind of big. Your factory is really large. And it does take a long time to walk from one end to the other or from the top to the bottom, depending on how you've built it. When you realize you've gotten all the way to one end and you forgot to bring enough screws with you to build what you wanted to build. And so they have these hypertubes, which are essentially things that you can build and shape in any direction that you want, that as soon as you walk up to a hypertube entrance, the iris opens up and sucks you up like a vacuum, and you just fly through this tube like Superman. And you can go back and forth as often as you want. It doesn't cost anything. You just have to hook them up to power, and you can do loop-de-loops if you want to lose your lunch because it's a first-person game. So like, there's a lot of stuff that you can do. And I realize that I haven't done it yet, but the hypertubes actually toss you out at a certain velocity. So if they're not parallel with the ground, or they are parallel with the ground, you'd kind of like go 10 feet, you know, kind of pop out, take a couple steps sort of thing. But if you angle them up a little bit, you can actually kind of like get some air.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I haven't seen it. Well, I saw it in the video, in the trailer, but I haven't seen anybody really do anything cool with it. But if you do a little bit of testing, you could probably hook up like a Hot Wheels jump sort of situation where you exit one hypertube, you're free falling in the air, and then your landing zone is just close enough to the next hypertube that sucks you in and keeps you going.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It could be some, and just for no other reason other than it's fun. And that's something that they really bring to what most people would consider like, why are you building a factory? Like, what about that sounds fun, you know? And I think there's just enough fun in the game to really make it worth checking out, especially if you like to organize things, if you like video games that keep you thinking as opposed to just like button mashing. Like, it's way more fun than like a Diablo, you know, in terms of, for me, than just like beating up bad guys. Not that there is anything wrong with that. I mean, I love Minecraft Dungeons and that's essentially a dungeon crawler, but there's just something about using my brain to like design something, figure out how I'm going to fit this amount of stuff into this amount of space. And at the end of the day, the reward is like when you go up high and you look at your factory and there's just like hundreds of conveyor belts going everywhere and everything is moving. And it's the kind of thing that you couldn't do on a computer game, like I want to say even like 10, 20 years ago, you know, in terms, like it just wouldn't be possible. It would just, look so bad and it would be just too much for processors to handle. But because of all the way the advances and stuff that we've had, and it looks really pretty. Like it's not Minecraft graphics. Like this is a modern looking game. And I'm just having a lot of fun with it. I'm really enjoying the outlet, as weird as that sounds. Do you ever play any kind of puzzle games like this? Any kind of building games?
It's so funny because as you're describing it, it sounds like you're describing like, oh man, this is like so much fun doing work. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to design this thing. Like I tried to play like Sim Cities and stuff. I was like, screw this, man. I'm not a city planner. I'd rather blow this shit up. So like I am the Diablo 3, shut my mind off, Torchlight, you know, like Minecraft, no interest. Minecraft Dungeons, some interest for the first time in a Minecraft property. I'm like the opposite.
I'm glad to hear that because Minecraft Dungeons, the only thing about it that's Minecraft is just the aesthetic. It's its own game. It's nothing like, it's the only thing you bring from regular Minecraft is that you already know what a zombie is and what a creeper is and what a skeleton is and how they operate. But everything else in Minecraft Dungeons is just an entirely new dungeon crawler. And I'm sure they're bringing in new people that have never played Minecraft before in their life.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's smart because at some point, like, just from a business standpoint, it's like, well, what new? We've introduced a new material for Minecraft. Boring. We have a new entire type of game. Oh, amazing. So, like, it's smart from a business model, but also the aesthetic is now established. Like, I walk down a toy aisle and I'll be like, they have Minecraft toys? Like, what the hell do kids do with Minecraft toys? Like the whole point of Minecraft was like to basically have digital toys.
Yeah.
But now it's fascinating that way. So yeah, I don't think I would build. What blows my mind is it's first person. I think that's the most interesting. It's almost like you're building I don't know if you're ever familiar, but like you were building like a Myst type of like game. And like you're the prequel, and then like if your character died and then like 500 years passed by, somebody would walk to your factory and be like, I wonder what happened to this man.
Yeah.
What happened here? He had a pneumatic tube that made him do a jump. Maybe he was suicidal. No one would do that for fun. And you're like, wait a minute. So like I hear like the first person walking through like a factory, and I'm just immediately picturing like Satisfactory, you know, 2, like you know, The Last of Us, like people walking through abandoned factories and trying to piece together, like, why did Joel make this hypertube this way? That's interesting. So, but that's cool. I think again that that building, like, what's so interesting to me is when I talk to you and a couple other friends, Minecraft, not Satisfactory, No Man's Sky, some of these like brilliantly creative. Build things, explore things. It's so fascinating to see that element of you because like in human nature, at some point there was definitely the crave to build, explore, and of course kill. And so those are some of the most popular games out there where you kill things, you explore things, or you build things. And in some cases, you know, things like Fortnite kind of do all of them. And yeah, it's just really fascinating how finally with the advent of VR, I think it's going to become even more engrossed of like an anime where people are going to be like, oh man, work stuck. I'm in my studio apartment, but I went into my factory for like 8 hours today, and now I have like 30,000 miles of planet or building or whatever. And
oh yeah,
at the same time, that's really cool. Like, that's a really interesting thing that you're not able to do on your own. And I can only imagine, as you know, with a lot of things, you know, once some company out there realizes, wait a minute, like, people really want to play this factory game. We need people to work in our factory, but we have robots now. So if we train them to control these robots, we have people who now are workers, and they can like, so I want to imagine, like, at some point, like, almost like a Ready Player One element of like, the world is like, you play this video game, but the video game is actually your job. And it puts you, you know, because we're not able to do certain things in person going forward, or, you know, the advent potentially of space exploration. And you think about those types of things, and with drones, and it's just fascinating. Like, that sort of stuff also is always cool, because it starts to slightly match what you think of the future being when you're a wee little kid. That's cool. Yeah. I wish I had that builder aspect to me, digitally. I do love building Legos quite a bit, but there's a tactileness to it that I miss when I'm doing it digitally.
So, have you looked up any of the Lego Great Ball machines or Great Ball contraptions?
No, are those like the where it like ping pongs and it like rolls through different thing?
Yeah. So the idea is that you have to have an entrance and an exit on a specific like location for your plate size. And so you build, you know, your own module that takes the, sometimes they look like basketballs or white marbles. And I'm not sure what they're from, like what set they're from. I think they're from like a Lego Technic set. But you then can come up with whatever way you want, as creative as you want, to use the Lego motors and Lego, you know, mechanical bits to move these balls around. And people have come up with some really cool stuff. And what they do at like Lego conventions is that everybody brings their own, but because it's got a preset spec, they all hook up. So your exit, your ball exit is the ball entrance location for somebody else's module. So you'll get like, you know, there's like a unicorn module, and then this one is just all pistons, and the other one is a Ferris wheel, and then this one sends them spinning around. And like, there's, it's basically like watching marbles go on forever. And I can't remember which convention. It's either like Cincinnati, it might even be Chicago, but it's one of the larger Lego conventions when conventions were still a thing. And it has the world record for like the longest Lego Great Ball contraption or Great Ball machine. I can't remember what they're called. I want to say it's the GBC Great Ball contraption, but just look it up on YouTube. Just look up, you know, like Lego largest Great Ball machine or contraption, and you'll find a video. And it's super fun, and it would have like that building but tactile quality to it. And then at the end, you've got like a toy, you've got like a marble toy. And people that build them on their own will very often loop it. So like when the ball gets to the end, there'll be some sort of contraption that like conveyor belt that will bring the ball back up to the top and then let it trickle down through the mechanism again.
Wow. There's some really awesome ones. And yeah. I see what you mean. Like one person made a mini golf esque looking one. So it's like, it rolls and then it like goes through the tiny courses, which is genius.
Yeah.
Aesthetically just extremely pleasing. I would be very worried though. Like, you spent like, I'm like, oh man, I spent like a year building this one. It looks so cool. I love it. Everything's red. And then you walk into the convention and unicorn guy's the person after you or before you, like, and you're like, oh shit, well, mine's red. And it like puts it from one part to another. I'm kind of like the bumper, and you built like an engine, and like people are like, well, the bumper is, I guess, essential. But I mean, like, everyone bumps a bumper, so
yeah,
screw that. So yeah, I'd be worried about that just from my own. I often find like if I could incorporate my imagination more into a tactileness, I would feel vastly more confident in my abilities as a human being, but I have not ever been able to translate it other than writing. so I don't have a lot of confidence in far many other things. So yeah, but hey, that's cool. I love when Legos in particular, because of how incredibly versatile they can be, the things you can do with them, from contraptions to, you know, just like building little models now. Like, I love the model things. I think we've talked about those in the show in the past, but it's just fascinating. Like, it's funny how when I was a kid, it was basically, I felt like it was only like five colors. And then the meeples were like, really, there was only like two meeples and they barely showed up and it was so weird. And now like minifigs people want to buy on their own. And now you have like specialty like parts, and it's just fascinating. Like, I love Lego as a concept and company overall. And it's great that they've exploded since I was a wee child.
Yeah, which is good because you need an adult income to afford Lego.
I was going to say, too. Yeah, exactly. It used to feel like they were cheap, but maybe they never were. Maybe my folks are just like, okay, well, you know, we got this.
Yeah, it's one of those moments where, like, you go down the toy aisle. You know, you want to buy a niece or a nephew, like, a small $10, $15 Lego kit, which do exist. And for my niece, she's at that age where she doesn't really care. Like, she either wants a big bucket of bricks to build whatever the heck she wants, and she's very imaginative and very cool with the stuff that she comes up with, or she wants to follow like instructions and build like a camper van for the scientist, you know, minifig that she wants or whatever. But all of those sets are very small and affordable. But as you're walking down the aisle, you see stuff where it's just like, that is $130 for a Lego set, and you're just like, yeah, either that has gone up astronomically in price because of licensing and stuff, or it was always this expensive and I really need to thank my parents
because a little bit of both, I think, for
like
sure.
Birthdays and Christmas from ages like 8 through 12 were Lego for sure.
Yeah. You know, for sure. The biggest
like
gift
pirate
of the
ships.
Day.
Yeah. Like,
yeah,
like
exactly.
Big things. Big thing.
That was the crown jewel of your birthday or Christmas.
Yeah.
If you're like, if that was your dig, was the massive superstructure or object usually. Yeah.
I'd love to have a Lego train set. I still would. I would set it up in
absolutely.
My spare room or something like that. I think they're really, but again, like, again, you only get so many tracks when you buy the set, and then to buy tracks separately, it's just, it adds up. Like, it's kind of crazy. I haven't yet gotten to the train part of Satisfactory. You can In the map that I'm working on or playing on, it's called the Northern something, and it's got a lot of resources, but it's low on space. So you have to be kind of creative in terms of, like, you don't have wide open spaces to just do whatever you want. You kind of have to pigeonhole your factory into different positions because you can't move mountains or blow up rocks or do anything like you can in Minecraft. You can move the earth and just kind of get it out of the way. But in this game, you can't. And in a lot of ways, it plays funny with your brain, because the idea is that you land on this planet and your job is to industrialize it. You are to destroy and pollute and just do nothing but please the factory over gods, right? But the planets are so pretty that, like, I'm even coming up to the point where, like, well, I could chop down that tree. That is a thing that I can remove in the game, but I like it and I don't want to remove it. So, like, I'm trying to keep some of the prettiness by, like, building, like, there's this giant, like, pink, almost like a cherry blossom tree, but like the size of a giant oak tree in the middle of my base, because it's like, I like it. I don't want to mow it down. I kind of want to, like, build, like how people build decks around trees. Like, I kind of want to do that with my factory just as a fun challenge and a fun kind of, like, well, you know, I could just remove it, but let's try something more interesting. But
that's the logo for your factory. Like, yeah, people would remember Pink Tree Factory as, like, well, factory, whatever the better name is. But yeah,
you can,
they
paint
would remember
stuff too.
It
you
that.
Can, you can, you got a color gun. You can run around and shoot stuff with, like, a color gun that changes its color. So I should make a bunch of stuff pink. But the,
awesome.
Yeah, the reason I bring all that up is because trains are a thing in the game, as well as other different sources of power. And, right now I'm using tractors to move coal from, like, I don't know, it's like 2 kilometers away from, to bring it back to my base for coal power. And I've got it all hooked up and working, but it took a lot of planning. But trains can haul, like, a lot of stuff, and they're very good over long distances where the tractors can only go on the ground. And obviously there's no roads. It's all just, like, you know, rough terrain. So, I'm looking forward to it because I'm definitely going to have like an inner child moment with setting up my own train system. Like it's just, it's going to be very orderly. There's going to be a lot of stuff. I'm not sure where I'm going to put it. It might have to be a SkyTrain because I don't know in this particular world, like what the restrictions are going to be. Cause like there's a lot of stuff where they make you think like when you want to move water through pipes uphill, you have to attach pumps to move the water. So I'm assuming with tracks and trains, you can only go up a certain grade. Like you won't be able to climb steep hills. You're going to have to go around them, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's one of those situations where I'm not sure how or where that's going to come in, but I that's at a later stage in the game and I've not played it that much because boy, oh boy, can you lose some time? Like, you know, you can, I'll just sit down and play a little Satisfactory. It's 9 o'clock. I'm an adult. I can do that. And then 1 o'clock in the morning rolls around. You're like, oh, goodness, I need to go to bed. That was really fun, but I've been sitting here a while and I always remember to take breaks. Like, I mean, you get up to use the bathroom or I stretch and like I'm pretty good about like refilling water and all that kind of stuff. But like you just, as you're sipping your water, you're thinking about the next thing you're going to do and then you just go do it. And it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, goodness, I need to go to bed. Like it can really creep up on you. But that, I mean, that's basically what's been monopolizing my free time lately. I have been watching some films on just on the weekends and kind of relaxing and nothing to really get into a big discussion, but I have noticed that I want to go with things that I have seen before. I am not in the mood to watch new stuff right now. I have been rewatching some of my favorite Marvel films. I call it the abridged order of watching the Marvel, you know, cinematic universe. I started with Captain America First Avenger, then I watched The Avengers, and then I watched Captain America The Winter Soldier. I haven't seen Thor Dark World or Iron Man 3 in a long time, and I might try to squeeze those in there because that's about the time frame that they would land in. And I'm thinking about going through and looking at the list and looking at the order in which they were released and or the time frame that they happen in and watching them in that order. And I definitely want to revisit Captain Marvel because I only saw that the once. And I'm looking forward to watching, what was the other one that I saw? I haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy in a long time. So I'm looking forward to watching that. But I've just felt safe in watching some of these things. Plus they're about superheroes and hope. So
yeah, there's a lot more. Yeah,
I find that there's just I've found myself, and you can probably speak to this, I have found myself really wanting a good Superman movie and not having one
or so, something. Yeah,
so Captain America, especially in the Winter Soldier, when he's Captain America the whole movie, like it's not an origin story. I can't remember, I think it's the Numian or the Numerian star, whatever the boat is at the very, the opening action sequence about the Winter Soldier, when he dives into the water and then runs along the deck of the boat and kicks the snot out of these terrorists. Like it is so much fun to like when he kicks the guy and he kicks the guy so hard that he hits the guardrail and flips over it into the water. But he accelerates through that. Kind of like the dude in Titanic that hits the propeller when he falls and he makes that like that ding and he kind of goes twirling. Like this is what happens to this guy. And you're like, oh boy, like just they really do a good job of just making Captain America feel like Superman in a lot of ways. And
yeah,
so Captain America is the Superman movie that we all want but don't have.
I've been wanting to rewatch Man of Steel, but it's not streaming or anything that's easy for me to watch. Although maybe it's honestly, it's probably on DC Universe. You probably,
yeah. I looked for it, but I couldn't find it either.
Yeah, it's I keep thinking like, well, now that time's passed, maybe I'll enjoy elements of it more than when I was really, really judging it.
Whether I said this live on a podcast or not, I might have been pre-show or post-show. But while I don't enjoy the Justice League, or really most of the more recent DC movies, I do really enjoy Henry Cavill as Superman. And I can get through Man of Steel ignoring some of the not so great parts, but really focusing on Cavill as Superman, and I can still enjoy that film.
Yeah, I always, as a Superman man, I always like have my nerd Mount Rushmore of Superman, both cartoon voiced and live action, and he just never can crack my top four. Like he just can't do it. Like there's a component of that character that's very important to me, and that's Clark. And the Clark that the writers, I don't blame Cavill, but the writers gave him was very like, I'm Superman, but I'm just going to wear flannel and walk around. Like, I get it. The glasses thing was dumb, but there's an element of it that's like, it's just, and I understand the campiness of it, but like, pure and simple, Christopher Reeve did things that made that character so believably enjoyable that your brain for a moment was like, yeah, if this was my coworker, I kind of overlooked that he's incredibly gorgeous, blue eyes, tall, fit dude, because he's got this annoying little voice and he's always got mustard on him and he's flopping and falling and it's gorgeous in the choreography of how Christopher Reeve does it. And there's a beautiful moment, and I believe it's in Superman 2, where, I mean, Christopher Reeve is just great overall, but like there's this beautiful moment where like he's thinking about, I think he's either has or he was about to tell Lois, and he stands in front of a mirror and you literally see him transform his body from what Clark Kent is to who he is.
It's in the first one.
It's in the first one, yeah, where he stands in front of the mirror.
Yeah, he just enters her apartment and he's waiting for her to get ready or get something. And he just kind of takes his glasses off briefly, stands up. And then he puts them back on again as soon as she enters the room. Like, he chickens out.
Yeah, and then as soon as he does the middle finger and his body assumes it immediately. It snaps into it. And it's beautiful. And it's just something I never got from Cavill. And it's not his fault. And to be frank, like Tim Daly, who did the Superman the anime series, which I love, they didn't really bother with the Clark Kent elements of that either. But there was just something about that cartoon series in the Bruce Tim verse that's just so well written,
yeah,
and so good that I give Daly that credit. So I think that's unfortunate. I'm giving a lot of the Superman actors credit for just being a composer. Again, I love Smallville. And there are elements of Tom Welling as Clark that just literally drive me up the walls. And this whole element of the character where he just is not embracing putting on the suit and whatnot, it just drives me up the walls. But like at the same time, there's an element of me that's like there are moments that he just really does what I want Clark and Superman to be. And I really enjoy it. And I think, again, it was really well written and he's surrounded by great talent because I love Erica Durance as Lois. So anyway, it just long story short, I understand what you're saying as far as like the comedic stuff. And I definitely think that of all of the franchises, the Captain America for me has no stinker. Every single one of them's great. My favorite Marvel film is Captain America Civil War. And I think Winter Soldier is pretty perfect. And I think First Avenger is pretty good, barring the last like 15 minutes or so, which is really just executive tie-in for Avengers. It's great. Like, I think overall that's a solid series, and it's always been anchored by Evans. And it's interesting to see where the future of the MCU universe is going to be as we involve more and more characters and maybe focus less on other characters going forward. So that'll be interesting to do.
I hadn't seen the first Avenger in a really long time. I know I liked it, and I just, again, like with origin films, you usually deal with at least the first act. So at least the first third of the movie, there's no superheroes because you're trying to get to the point where they, you know, use their powers or get their thing and all that kind of stuff. And I had forgotten, because you have the 9 years of the buildup, you have some of the moments from different situations that come into it, and as well as the Agent Carter television series. But you really do forget the genuine like love story of Peggy Carter and Steve Rogers. And what I noticed was not something that was like the key moments in the film, but something a little bit more subtle. It was after Captain America saves a bunch of people. He basically saves the people that would eventually become his like commando crew, the Howling Commandos. He rescues them from the Hydra base after being told that nothing can be done. He just goes in behind enemy lines on his own and brings them all back. And he's marching back into camp and find a girl that looks at you the way that Peggy Carter looks at Steve Rogers in that moment when she goes in to say, like, hey, you're alive and you're thanks for doing a good job. And she's basically saying everything with her eyes that she can't say in front of 200 people. And it is a brilliant little moment of acting because she's not doe-eyed. Like she's not being what a lot of the other women are in the film that dote on him, that he doesn't know how to handle it. She's looking at him with just like pride and admiration, but like there's a lot going on, and she's also like, boy, you're good looking, like all at the same time. And I mean, I have an unabashed crush on Hayley Atwell. I think she's
amazing.
But she's such a good actor, and it's a moment that the first time I saw the film, I think I was just so caught up in like the heroic moment for Rogers that I wasn't really paying attention to Carter. But now having seen Endgame, I was looking more closely at their relationship and how they do some subtle development there in the first film. It's a good moment.
Yeah, it's really good. I've always enjoyed Chris Evans. It was just so funny to hear him announced and remembering him as Human Torch, mm-hmm. and from Not Another Teen Movie, and these like goofy, like cocksure pretty boy type roles. And I'm like, that's who they want to cast as his character. And like, it's funny because honestly, if you look at interviews with Chris Evans, Steve Rogers is more his speed. Like he's not more like a very nice, simple guy. And the boisterous, like wacky characters that are more Robert Downey, where like Robert Downey is basically Tony Stark. Like he's putting a lot of his personality into it. And the same is true of Chris Evans. You would think that he would be more like the brash guy I've seen in his early career, but he's not. And so he's always done an amazing job. And I just always thought, like, you know, it was brilliant. And obviously they were able to build an entire multi-billion-dollar franchises off these guys. But like Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, like, they can hang their hat like on that alone.
Yeah.
Along with a billion other great casting choices. I mean, legitimately there's been very few bad ones, but it's nice when you can, when you can definitely point at the poster boys, quote unquote, and be like, oh yeah, we nailed Cap. We nailed Iron Man. I think
they nailed Thor too. And before I get into that though, I want to point out that I really do enjoy the Black Widow story in Winter Soldier. I think you get to know a lot more about her than the movie will lead you to believe by title and theme. Like it's
great. She's fantastic in that. Yeah. I think if you rewatch Iron Man 3 too, you'll be pleasantly surprised by her first appearance and a little bit of her involvement there. I think we've discussed it before. It's unfortunate for her because she's sort of been always the sidecar and so many of these big stories. So now that she's getting her own movie, that'll be good. But like for that reason alone, we haven't really seen a consistency from her. Like she kind of is always marrying some of her language and the way she's acting to the people she's with. And I mean, that's what you do as a spy. You kind of are like there.
Yeah. Chameleon, right? And
yeah, exactly. So, but I think of all the people besides Hawkeye, the relationship I feel is the most genuinely honest is her with Steve. And like, I will be honest, for Winter Soldier, I ship them. I was like, why not? I just freaking love them. But the brilliance about that relationship to me is that she's just like, Romanoff is just an unabashed flirt. It's one of her tools. She's always been that way. But there's a level of honest friendship and flirting between Steve and her where Steve like actually kind of flirts back in a smart way. Like he doesn't know how to act around certain attention. But there's something about Romanoff where I think maybe because he knows that she's a spy and he's been around them that he can like just be himself, but he's also not actively pursuing her. So they just have a naturally amazing chemistry that's totally like, I just really enjoy the two of them chatting it up. And I think is it in Winter Soldier where at one point they're trying to hide and she's like, kiss me, and he's like, what? And like you see that moment where like he can flirt all he wants and he tries to talk a big game and act like, oh, I'm cool, I'm Captain America, I'm not like charmed by Black Widow. But in that brief moment you can see that Steve Rogers is a little nervous, and Romanoff kind of puts him back on his heel.
Yeah,
and that's another really beautiful moment.
There's a conversation in a truck that they borrowed later to get away, where she's teasing him about, like, so where did Mr. Boy Scout learn how to, you know, hotwire a car? He's like, Nazi Germany. We're borrowing this. Get your feet off the dash. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then she asks him if that was his first kiss in 100 years. And he was just kind of like, screw off. Was it that bad? She's like, meh.
Yeah. Yeah, that conversation. Yeah. Yes, I love it. There's the sort of road tripness of some of their elements in Winter Soldier. Yeah.
And I like the banter where she's like constantly trying to set him up with, like, you know, Peggy from account, not Peggy, but, like, you know, Haley from accounting, or
over the earpiece.
Yeah, yeah, the nurse down the hall, and he's like, "Let's save the hostages, then let's find me a date." You know, like, she's like, "I'm multitasking," you know, and it, that's exactly the big opening sequence. But I like the one-liners that Steve has to kind of to acknowledge, but also dismiss that kind of stuff. And she's like, "Well, what about this person?" She goes, "Well, you're too scared." He's like, "Too busy," and he jumps out of a plane. He's
kind of like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When does a superhero find the time, right?
Right, yeah, it's just really, really well done. Acting, execution, writing, direction, like a lot of the stuff around Chris Evans, his properties as the Captain America stuff, I always just thought was like really done, well done.
And I want to say, I'm blanking on their names. Who are the writers for Endgame and Infinity War? It's
I know the directors are the Russo brothers.
I can't remember if it's the Russo brothers.
They wrote it too. Of. Okay, yeah, yeah.
So the Russo brothers.
They came on with the Winter Soldier. Yeah, that was their first one.
I think one of the Russo brothers is in the Winter Soldier. He's the doctor that's taking care of Fury under the dam when they reveal that Fury isn't dead. I don't remember which Russo brother it is, but it's one of them is the doctor telling, telling either the, I think he has to take care of Black Widow or something like that. Like he's got to help her. She's been shot or something by, the Winter Soldier. So then they have to get her medical attention, but he's like, you know what, he'll want to see him first or something. So yeah, it's, but you can feel the difference. Like you can feel the difference from the earlier movies to the Winter Soldier, just how complex and the one-liners and the characters are really hammered in. Like everyone knows, and I don't mean the actors, but like every character knows very specifically who they are, what they stand for, and where their lines are drawn. And I find that makes it for a really, really good film. And I think I might be with you. I think that as much as I like the Infinity War Endgame kind of like climax of everything, Endgame can be really chunky because of how much they have to get done. I think Civil War is probably my favorite as well. It's one of the better films.
It's so good. I think emotionally the one that Endgame was great. It emotionally hit in a lot of notes that I thought were important. But I think I've brought it up before, but I think there's just a few key moments in Civil War that, superhero movies aside, films in which you invested in characters have not impacted me as well as moments of Civil War. It was just really well done. And of course you have the investment. You've been with a lot of these characters for a long time. I get that. But you also can't knock that because they had to put a lot of time and money and structure into that. And plenty of people have tried to do that and failed miserably. So I give them credit for the infrastructure as much as I give them credit for building one movie, which in my estimation you could still kind of watch on its own. Like I think 80% of Civil War you can stands on its own. 20% of it you definitely will want to have a lot more knowledge, like random Ant-Man showing up, random this thing or that thing showing up, you'd be like, oh, okay, well, like if I don't see these movies they don't matter as much to me, but they do enough to lean into those characters, to give them moments, to give them beats. It's just so smart. The Marvel just in general, they just did really well. Like even you know, you called up Jeremy Renner and you're like, do you want to be in another film? And like in any other franchise, somebody's like, fuck, screw no. Like, I don't want to, because like, you're only going to give me 3 lines of dialogue and it's going to be super boring. But like Jeremy Renner's showing up every time because he knows they're going to give him really solid dialogue, at least 2 or 3 accent moments. And he's also probably going to have a crap ton of fun because the whole set and community is great. So it's like, that's exactly what you want. You want that for an audience member. You want that as an actor too. Yeah. So I think just the whole MCU is really interesting. So it'll be very, 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 very nerve-wracking to see what other big tent poles they try to erect as they go towards, you know, I guess another culmination in the future of, like,
yeah, phase three, I think they're calling it phase four. I can't remember which
phase
is.
Four, I believe. Phase four, yeah.
Before we move on, is it Ultron where they round out Hawkeye and you meet his family? And
yes, yeah. They need to escape, so they go hang out with Hawkeye. He has probably the most of a bump for Avengers 2, which again is much maligned, but I've rewatched that and I think that movie's incredibly good still, but you know, fine.
I think the issue that came from Avengers 2 and why it felt strange is that it came after Iron Man 3, and it felt like a rehash of the climax, a bunch of robots. Like, it just, Iron Man 3 and what's going on there are very much mirrored in Age of Ultron. But I think part of that kind of makes sense, because it's kind of Tony Stark and Banner kind of create Ultron. So, like, it's,
yeah,
like
there's Tony again.
Yeah, there's, like, it's there's a lot of stuff that I find repetitive. And I think it was Lou that pointed out that in a lot of Iron Man movies, the plot is basically old disgruntled acquaintance of Tony Stark wants revenge. Like, that's kind of like the shtick. And oh, you know what it was? I was talking about Far From Home, Spider-Man movie. And it's essentially Iron Man's gone and Spider-Man is the new tech hotness. And so old disgruntled Mysterio Stark employee wants to get back at the world. It's like, oh, really? This is the best you can come up with? So even though it was a good movie, I did find, like, I rolled my eyes and, like, really? You're an old employee. Okay. And so is your whole team. Okay. Got it.
You know, like, yeah. The,
that was really strange.
The, I always find that, and it's the reason why after Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2 to me is the absolute worst.
I can just go through to my mind and go, like, yeah, okay, I'm caught up.
It's so bad. And 3, I didn't give as much of a credit for. It's okay. I hated what they did with the Mandarin.
Yeah.
Total, like, stereotypes aside, like, still really didn't love it, and I didn't love Extremis. But as a general plot point, if it's Tony Stark, the biggest villain of a Tony Stark film is Tony Stark. The choices he made in the past,
yep,
or the tech he's working on now. Like, he's constantly refighting his own robots, or he's refighting against the choices he's made. And it's a brilliantly interesting character thing, because if you think about it, there's so many ways in which Tony Stark gets out of stuff because he's the smartest person, or he has the best tech, or he has all the money. It's like the Batman problem. Like, Batman's real problem with all these things is Batman. Like, Batman screws himself over more than anybody else does. And so Tony Stark's sort of the same way. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff draped around the Captain America franchise that I'm like, well, you know, I'll watch any of those things for sure, because I know, like, no matter what, I've always felt the quality in the Captain America franchise was top notch.
So what have you been up to the last little while?
Well, I'll do some roundups, because I love talking more about stuff when we both have absorbed it more. So just to hit a quick, if some quick hitters, going back to, like, video games, I've been still playing a lot of Borderlands 3, and I've gotten to a point in the game where I farm, which, if you're less familiar with loot shooters, basically you're just reloading the same area over and over again to try and get better drops for different weapons or gear. And when I get to that point, there's, you know, you don't want to hear the same boss yell the same stupid effing phrase over and over again. So, like, I just turn down the game sound and play music. And recently, as I've been playing, I've been catching up with some different things. One's like a newer album from March 2020. The Weeknd's After Hours. I don't really think that it'll probably be your speed, Joel. And it's usually not my speed. I could look up exactly all the weird, wacky new terms they use to describe the music, but basically, to me, it sounds a lot like kind of synthy club hip hop music, sort of. I'm so old that that's what it sounds like. But, like, legitimately,
I've been listening to mostly 70s rock. So
yeah, easily defined decade type of music. But anyway, if you're familiar with The Weeknd, I think a lot of that album is still very similar to some of the other stuff, but like it's a little bit less immediately bubblegum poppy the way Starboy and False Alarm were from his album just prior to this one. I loved it. It's very much sort of a meditative album after hours. Basically sort of kind of a lot of the songs deal with what happens when you kind of achieve a level of career and life, fame, fortune sort of stuff, and some of the ramifications there. Probably not the absolute best to listen to if you're by yourself and not feeling very perky, except for I think the song Blinding Lights is great. Lots of fun with there. Save Your Tears, I think, is also very fun, even though some of the content of that is sadder, just like sort of missing somebody in a relationship. But the bounciness of those two tracks I love. Heartless and Blinding Lights are both are singles that are released, so you might have actually have more acknowledge of those two if you're at least listening to some current music. But Save Your Tears, Heartless, and Blinding Lights from The Weeknd new album After Hours. Really love that album, and those three tracks in particular I just keep loving to listen to. And then the other flip side was catching up with Gorillaz, which was a band I absolutely love and has always been one of my favorites. And after Plastic Beach, I kind of just weaned off. A lot of Plastic Beach hit me wrong. After Demon Days, their second album is like one of my favorite albums of all time. But so I re-caught up with some of their other main tentpole albums, Humans with a Z, and The Now Now. Let's make sure it is The Now Now, not The New New. Anyway, those two albums are also, I have to give them more credit, because what happens with me and the Gorillaz is that I always like don't love it, or I don't know if you have this trouble with music, but it is The Now Now. If you like, you love an artist and you get there, you've listened to like their back catalog so much, they get a new album and the first time through you're like, ugh, I hate everything. And it's like, because you've listened to all their other music a billion times, you got to give it some time. And that's what's happened with these two Gorilla albums. I found some really great tracks in there that I love from each of them. The second one, the older of the two albums, Humans, I really love Strobe Light. That one's really fun. Again, sort of synthy, clubbish, but really fun. And Trans, TRANZ, from The Now Now. That one's a lot of fun. I would really recommend The Now Now if you're going to listen to any of these albums, Joel. I think that one by The Gorillaz is probably more your speed. Humility and Trans in particular are easily digestible songs that are sort of have like a bubblegum-ish feel, that if you're familiar with Gorillaz at all, those tracks feel a lot more reminiscent of the first self-titled album.
From their self-titled album. Like I would know singles to hear them, but I wouldn't know the name of the song. I wouldn't necessarily know the lyrics, but I would know them to like them. Like not something that I would just go over and turn off. Before I get into, you know, too much about the music, out of curiosity, what are you listening to it on? Is it Spotify? Is it Apple Music?
Like with our cell phone coverage, we get Tidal. Like as in an ocean title, that's how it is.
Yeah.
But usually if I was paying, I'm using Spotify.
Spotify.
Those are the two things. I love Spotify. I miss Spotify so much. But so, Tidal's fine. It does well enough.
I'm asking because for a number of reasons, I just feel I've been getting a lot of information overload. And so rather than listening to podcasts while I've been cooking and doing the dishes, I've been trying to just listen to more music. A lot of it just comes from conversations with friends where they've asked, like, hey, what kind of music do you listen to? And I don't listen to music very much at all. And they're like, what? That's weird. How do you not listen to music? I'm like, well, I often have podcasts that I very much enjoy that I find very relaxing. But in a way, and it can be something as simple. It doesn't have to be anything too like dramatic, but sometimes just playing a lot of Satisfactory in an afternoon, you know, on a 4-hour stream, that's a lot of information that you're just kind of dealing with all the time. And then to add more news shows, like a tech news show or a video game news show into my listening, you know, while I'm trying to take a break, doesn't really work out. And I've always liked rock music over any kind of other music. Not that I'm a big proponent of anything, but if I'm going to say, if you're going to get me to choose a radio station, I want the classic rock radio station. And, but it's been years. Like when I was growing up, the gym where I would work out always had the local rock station on. And some of those songs are like, you know, 15, 20 years old, but that's fine. I'm now listening to the same stuff. But
yeah, that's like 40 years
old. It's like 40
old.
Years old. 50 years old. Some of the stuff is in the 70s, man. And I'm really enjoying it. And I'm also trying to learn like the groups that I actually like. Not just, oh yeah, that song with that guitar riff that I really enjoy and like hitting like, but I don't pay for Spotify. So I only have like 6 skips an hour and I'm debating giving it a go because I'm listening more and more. I like to be able to control my lists and be able to like listen to stuff in sequence rather than just random. But it's been a lot of fun and it's been kind of reminiscent of some of the Iron Man stuff we were talking about. Cause of course, AC/DC comes on a lot, Led Zeppelin, a little bit of Guns N' Roses, but that's more in the '80s. So like there's a lot of stuff like that. That's been kind of hitting my speakers. However, to kind of tie it in back into Gorillaz, I do like Deadmau5. Not all of his stuff, but a lot of it I do find, I quite like. And,
totally less familiar with Deadmau5. Yeah. I know who he is, but the music of it is interesting.
Deadmau5 would be very similar to Daft Punk, another group that I also quite like. So that kind of stuff. And that's where the Gorillaz kind of tie in, I think, is good. Now, I've heard of The Weeknd. I know the artist, but if I've listened to a song, it's not because I know that I did. It's because I did and I didn't know who it was. I don't listen to modern music at all. I couldn't tell you who's the latest thing. You know, I know that Taylor Swift is really popular. That's about it.
But she's older now. Like you would have to throw out like Billie Eilish, which by the way, one of her. Yeah, I didn't know who she was. And now I've listened to one of her songs. So now I feel vaguely relevant. Yeah. But yeah, exactly.
And Billie Eilish, one of her tracks is very frequently played on the satellite radio at the gym currently before it was all closed down in March. The list on their satellite radio is too small. Like I will go work out for an hour and a half and hear the same song twice. But what I can't remember which song it has like a weird whistle kind of riff in it. But it's a jamming tune. What I usually say about Billie Eilish is that after trying to listen to some of her stuff, after figuring out, you know, who she was and why she was so popular, I can see how immensely talented she is and know that it's also just not for me. Like it's just not my favorite type of music.
Yeah.
But it is.
Is it Bad Guy?
It might be Bad Guy. I think it might be Bad Guy.
I'm a bad guy. Boop, 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 boop.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Sort of thing.
But with a good bass system, it's actually a really good song for working out too.
Oh, like, yeah. There's an amazing deep bass part. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, like she's one of those people that I can very clearly see how talented that she is. But it's just not something I listen to all the time.
That's hilarious. That's the one song I know. If it is, in fact, Bad Guy. Mm-hmm. And it's also on my my farming list. I mix that in with the tracks I've listened to. I love that freaking song.
You should share your Spotify I guess it's a title playlist, but you should share your playlist with me because very often I'll need something when I'm playing Minecraft or something. The music in Satisfactory is good, but it's not that good.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that they would give us a radio. Like I want to be able to do a radio in the game and be able to like, cause they give you goofy stuff like that. It's not all practical. There's like an awesome sink and an awesome store where you can buy like just silly statues and like just knickknacks and just silly in-game stuff. I would love to have like a real jukebox or radio that you could actually tune to something really cool. You know, that would be fun.
Vaguely good. Yeah. There's what's ironic is, sometimes I have thematic playlists, but the one that I listen to the most is just a Mitch Match. I call it work in progress because I constantly am adding and subtracting just things I want to listen to at this exact moment. Mm. So it is such a mishmash of stuff. But the good thing is if you listen to that playlist and you found 4 or 5 songs on it that you like, it'll thread you to other playlists potentially that I would have.
Nice.
And then you can ignore the other stuff that you wouldn't like. But yeah. Those I highly recommend those albums. If synth pop seems to be the word that I keep seeing for Gorillaz and and The Weeknd. So if synth pop is a phrase that actually means anything to you, then check those albums out, particularly those songs. So I think if you listen to those songs, you don't like them, likely the rest of the album will not be in your speed, maybe, for any of those. But I really, really, really enjoyed listening to that for work and play recently, those three.
If you like synth pop, check out Electric Light Orchestra. You'd be familiar with them, because they're one of their songs, Mr. Blue Sky, opened up Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, Mr. Blue Sky. I love Mr. Blue Sky. Yeah. Evil Woman.
I've been listening to some of their other stuff, just not on purpose, just like it's part of the 70s playlist that pops up on Spotify. And I mean, you get to the point where like you can pick out like, oh, that's the Electric Lights Orchestra for sure. But it's very happy. Like it's really upbeat stuff.
Their absolute favorite, my favorite song of theirs right now, because Mr. Blue Sky I've heard so many times it's kind of worn out a bit, is Rock and Roll is King. That song is so much fun. Rama lama lama lama, rock and roll is king. It's nice. So much fun, Joel. So that's my first recommendation to you, is just because it's in your wheelhouse and you're comfortable with them. Listen to Electric Light Orchestra's Rock and Roll is King. It is so fun. Like, it's just a fun song. It's so much fun. I love that one. That's my favorite ELO song.
Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is, of course, brought to you by you. The Citadel Cafe is 100% listener supported. If you're getting value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. You can become a member at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Joining at any level will get you an invite to the member-only Discord server. There are multiple levels with different rewards like Discord roles and bonus episodes. However, during the course of COVID-19 and all of the lockdown with everybody at home recently, I've opened up the tiers. So at any level of support, you get access to everything that's there, which is good. And the base level is $1 a show, which is $4 a month, which is less than a latte at Starbucks. So if you've got that to spare and you'd like to support some independent podcasting, then head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and check out how you can become a member. If you have any questions at all, just hit me up. I'd be happy to answer them. And we have a new patron. Every month, I say, it would be nice to have one more than the month before. And for June, we've gone from 20 to 21. So thank you very much to the new folks that have come on board. Not that I'm opposed to having 22. So if you'd like to come on board, then again, the website is patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. And I have a really important pick this week. I am going to point you towards twitch.tv/pixelriffs. PIXLRIFFS is also the same on Twitter. Pixel Riffs, Johnny, has been on this show a number of times. He is my co-host on the Spawn Chunks podcast that we record every Monday, all about Minecraft. He is doing a charity stream this Saturday, June 20th, at twitch.tv/pixelriffs from 12 p.m. to roughly 8 p.m. UK time. So that's 4 hours ahead of me or 5 hours ahead of Eastern time. But 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. UK time. Again, look him up on Twitter. He'll be announcing when he goes live. All proceeds from this Saturday will be donated to the Loveland Foundation. The Loveland Foundation is committed to showing up for communities of color in unique and powerful ways, with a particular focus on Black women and girls. I believe it's a U.S. charity as well. However, that's not all that Johnny is doing. Both him and his wife are going to be streaming and raising money. And this June, he's actually donating to a number of charities. I'll have a link to the Twitter thread where he explains everything in the show notes. But I've already mentioned the Loveland Foundation is one. UK Black Pride is another. Dream Defenders is a multiracial youth-led activist group speaking out against police terror and the injustices in the, I believe, the prison system. And the Okra Project is a collective that sends Black trans chefs to homes of Black trans people who may be struggling with food insecurity. So for Pride Month and for a lot of the civil liberties and civil rights things that are going on in the world right now, Johnny is doing a whole lot of good. And this is a guy that has, I think he's got over 500,000 subscribers on YouTube. Like, he's got a large audience. And so I just want to point everyone that I can in his direction this coming Saturday, the 20th, for his charity stream. It's also a ton of fun. His wife is into some indie games. They're going to be playing some Minecraft together, probably some Minecraft Dungeons as well. They're just adorable and hilarious. And Johnny is a talented streamer, talented content creator. He's obviously a good podcaster. I really enjoy working with him. He's been on this show a number of times as well. And I just, it's the breadth of charities and stuff that are important to him and his wife, who happens to be American. They're living in the UK, but she's an expat. So all of the things that are going on right now are obviously hitting very close to home. So they are gearing up to do a lot of really cool things this month, and in particular this Saturday, June 20th. So we'll have links and information in the show notes, but don't miss it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. That wraps up this episode of The Citadel Cafe. You can find more information about the show and links to some of the things that Brock and I talked about at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter. Subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. Word of mouth, however, is the easiest way to support the show. Just tell a friend they should listen to The Citadel Cafe and where they can find it. It is really surprising how far our personal recommendations go. Just like we talked today about music, you know, it's one of the best ways to bring new listeners into the podcast. And while you're out there on the interwebs, if you wouldn't mind leaving a star review on the Apple Podcast app, that would be a huge favor to me and the rest of the people on the show. A lot of podcast platforms ping the iTunes store or the Apple Podcast app when they're looking for new shows. So the higher a show is rated, the more likely it is to show up in someone's new feed. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio. You can check me out on Mondays, as I mentioned, with Johnny Pixel Riffs at thespawnchunks.com, all about Minecraft. We had a brand new snapshot come out today, so there's going to be yet more news coming this week on the show. So looking forward to that. You can also follow me at Joel Duggan on social media, and I will point you towards twitch.tv/Joel Duggan, where you will more than likely see both Minecraft and Satisfactory in the future. Brockett, where can people find you online?
You can just usually look for The Cat Volver on social media. That's usually my tag. If you're playing Borderlands 3, find me at Cat Volver on PSN, and we can play that. Otherwise, I don't do a ton of stuff. I'm the Joel Duggan of 70s rock social media. I stick to my safe harbors.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
I'm a bad guy. Boop, 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 boop.